Turtle Creek property, and direction was given to staff. We discussed an item, a status of negotiations item with SLCTA, and direction was given to staff. We conferred with real property negotiator regarding the property in Avila, and again, direction was given to staff. Let's see, do we have consensus on the order of business? Do we have consensus on the order of business? Yes? Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes. If,
that is on, isn't it? Thank you. I'd like to request pulling item number 9 off of the agenda and ask permission to bring that back at the next board meeting for a little bit more background, I think, than this item has in tonight's meeting.
That's fine with me. Does anyone object?
Yeah.
Mrs. Botwin?
Madam Chair, I don't object. That's fine with me. But shouldn't there, I know I have a number of questions about it. Maybe Dr. Valentine would want to get our questions before he takes it back so that he can research the answers to those questions. Pardon? Oh, that's a possibility.
Well, please feel free to give me a call and give me any questions you like, because that'll help me build the item.
Okay. Does that work for you?
Yeah.
Okay. So then we move to approval of minutes.
Move approval of the minutes of the June 18th, June 21st, and July 5th, 2005 meeting.
Does anyone have any corrections? Okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that passes unanimously. Okay, correspondence. One item of correspondence was received from the Los Osos Community Advisory Council regarding the potential use of the Sunnyside School campus site. And
question, Madam Chair. Has anyone answered LOCAC telling them that we will keep them advised of the progress of this?
Yes, I've done so.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've also informally spoken to LOCAC members and assured them that we would keep them informed of what was going on out there.
Okay, well then, we have public comment. And we have several people who wish to address the board.
Let's see, Gretchen Clark, I think this is probably, since there's no agenda item with this on it, that this would be where it would fit. So you got 3 minutes.
Am I, is this on? Okay. My name is Gretchen Clark. I'm a resident of Los Osos, and I have concerns about a new development being proposed for the Sunnyside Elementary campus. Mr. Jeff Edwards, the current leaseholder, has generated a considerable amount of promotional activity about what he calls, quote, a new vision for Los Osos. Named Sandhill Village after the first local elementary school built in the area, this proposed mixed-use redevelopment project, such as workforce housing and public gathering areas. While these might be good ideas for enhancing our community resources, they are wrong for the Sunnyside Elementary School site for a number of reasons. Number one, Mr. Edwards does not indeed have any agreement with the district for a purchase or 99-year lease with this property. Number two, such a project would foreclose the district's ability to reopen the school at a future point if the need arose. And number three, the impact on the surrounding neighborhood would be anything but community building. As far as I can see from plan drawings, the 12-acre development could be at least 3 stories high in some places and generate considerable traffic to the already congested intersections along Los Osos Valley Road near the community center. I am here to ask that the board be vigilant about Mr. Edwards' advancing public relations campaign. He admits that he has no agreement with the board for the site, and the words proposed mixed-use development do accompany Sandhill Village promotional materials. But other elements are delivering a de facto legitimacy to this project. On the website, one headline reads, "Mixed-use project to bring big benefits to Los Osos." At the chamber mixer hosted by his company at the Sunnyside School last month, there were even Sandhill Village t-shirts being distributed. We are concerned that the numbers of people drawn to the chamber mixer and documented on video footage could be used to support a contention by developers that the project had broad-based community support, and that this community support would be used to try and get leverage from you, the board. Due to the current controversy about sewer issues in our town, we are also concerned that these efforts would go unnoticed until they reach critical mass. I would like to leave this letter, along with some other materials, for the board for your perusal, some downloads from the website, and the t-shirt. The Sunnyside site already serves our community. I ask that the board be aware of the current level of promotion and that they remember their responsibility to the future children of Los Osos. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Laura Laurel Carlisle.
Hi, I'm Laurel Carlisle. I've lived in Los Osos for 25 years in the Sunnyside neighborhood. I, too, am concerned about the proposed development. I believe that the school has more value kept as possible school site. Once this development were to happen, it couldn't be a school anymore. I know that there's been projections that there's not going to be as much growth and that there's not going to be a need for a school. However, I'm not convinced that that's true. My other concern is that the neighborhood couldn't handle the extra traffic. I think that the mixed use would just draw in far too much traffic into a neighborhood. It's a neighborhood. I don't think that we need more retail space currently. I don't think we need more office space. There's a lot of those things already here. And I'm concerned that with all of his advertisement that it's going to be, he's going to convince everybody that, oh, it's something we need, when I don't think that it's something we need, and I want to make sure that even though the sewer is taking up everybody's focus, that something like this doesn't get snowballed in.
To lease the property and that we have no interest in selling it right now.
Tony Evans.
Thank you.
Tony Evans, President, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Good evening. And from my perspective, summer is starting to draw to a close. I'm coming to this meeting after attending a meeting of the Alliance for a Better California. And I just wanted to let you know that as we met with carpenters and electricians and other people that understand the importance of getting behind the propositions that most impact schools, it's very heartening. And our Teachers Association, of course, will be organizing our members to work diligently on behalf of the interests of education this November. And I will be sending out information to board members, administrators, to let you know of opportunities where you can join in as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone who didn't submit a forum but who would like to address the board, sir?
Good evening. My name is Bruce Smith. I'm a seasoned teacher down here at San Luis Obispo High School, and I have one particular request I would like to present to the board. In June, you approved my application for a reduced work schedule. I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to being enthused, ready to go back to work again in September. And then, you know, it's going to come winter, and I'm going to have to take those 12 weeks off, and I'll get refreshed and ready to come back again in the spring and teach again on a part-time basis. So I'm really excited about that. But what I would like to request the Board of Education to do is to examine your limitation of this program to 2 years. It's my understanding that at the state level, this can go up to a maximum of 10 years. Well, that's a long time, but I'm looking at if it would be possible in the future to set this program up for the benefit of both the district and the teacher for like about 5 years. There are numerous advantages for both. from a teaching standpoint, the enthusiasm can start to wane a little bit after 30-some-odd years in the classroom. And I'm really feeling regenerated, and I think other teachers would feel the same, having that slack time in between or by teaching part-time or however it's set up. There are several advantages I would like to have you consider. One is from a salary standpoint. With two teachers going on to this type of a program, that kind of brings you down to just a little bit more over a single teacher's salary and bring in a new teacher at roughly about half the pay grade. So there's one thought. Another thought is having all of this experience, and if you look around the numbers of teachers that are at my age group, a little before, a little after, I think that experience can be used to help mentor a lot of new people coming in. And I that's something you should consider, because there's a lot of experience, a lot of culture, a lot of understanding for nothing, or donate it for nothing to the district so they can be a district laptop as long as I'm teaching here, and I could have an HP, you know, Windows XP, so it would be right at the same level as all the new equipment that's going in. Would be, it'd be really advantageous to teachers to be able to do that. Just a thought, if there's some way that that could be worked out. There's some legal issues, I know. Okay? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the board? Sir.
Good evening. My name is Steve Sawyer, and I'm a resident and business owner in Los Osos. I'd like to speak to the board tonight about the Sunnyside school site in Los Osos. As we are all aware, this is a surplus school site, and a portion has been leased for a short time to a Mr. Jeff Edwards. What you may not be aware of is that Mr. Edwards has renamed your school and done so in violation to his lease agreement with the school district. I show you a copy of the Los Osos Chamber of Commerce directory, in which Mr. Edwards has joined the chamber as Sandhill Village, formerly Sunnyside Elementary School. There's also an ad in the directory stating the same thing. This was recently mailed to every address in Los Osos. In addition, Mr. Edwards recently held a mixer in the multipurpose room at the school and invited the entire community of Los Osos to attend. And I believe one or more of you was present. This event was co-sponsored by the Los Osos Chamber of Commerce, and normally mixers are a place for networking, referring business, meeting new clients and business owners, and socializing. Mr. Edwards used this event to introduce his plan to redevelop the property that he does not own. What those in attendance didn't know was that they were being used as pawns in his attempt to lure investors into his project. After the audience was incorrectly told that Mr. Edwards was in negotiations to purchase or lease the property for 99 years, certain individuals were handpicked to give testimonials on camera of their support for the project. The entire event was videotaped, and those in attendance will be used in a video to demonstrate community support for Mr. Edwards' project, whether they supported it or not. I've spoken to Mr. Russell Miller here at the school district, and he has assured me that the district has made no decision and has had no discussion that would lead Mr. Edwards to believe that he'll be able to lease the site for 99 years, buy the site, and or redevelop Sunnyside School. I'm here today to make you aware that the community of Los Osos is being misled about what is occurring at the Sunnyside school site. Any claims by Mr. Edwards that he has community support for his plan should be scrutinized, and I urge you to not lend any weight to any video or testimonials he presents to this board, since they're based on misleading and erroneous information. I further urge this board to move cautiously with regards to the Sunnyside site. Many people in Los Osos cherish that school facility. I understand that there may come a time that you decide to sell that property. I can only hope that if that time comes, before that time comes, the school board will take comment from and take into consideration the concerns of a fully informed community of Los Osos. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Comment and conversation. The other one is the state. Let's take the state piece first. As we've talked about a number of times over the past several months, in particular the governor's promise on Prop 98 to garner a $2 billion forgiveness from the educational community. His promise was that should the revenues associated to Prop 98 increase the amount that districts would get under Prop 98 greater than $2 billion, he would pass that on to the school districts. He had broken that promise and not passed it on. Today, CTA filed a lawsuit against the governor in pursuit of making him adhere to the provisions of Proposition 98 as it's stated within the Constitution. As of today, the state of California owes education community $3.1 billion under Prop 98 after you take away the $2 billion forgiveness we agreed to. That language is found in a trailer bill to the budget of which the Prop 98 forgiveness component was key to making it happen. SB 1101. 1101 is the legislation, and it's a trailer bill to that budget, as I said. And it delineates in the language that he signed and that the legislature passed that should there be any revenues in excess of the $2 billion, it would be passed on. And, in fact, he chose not to do that. CTA, the Educational Coalition, all of those, and we're joined by Jack O'Connell in this one. Jack actually issued a rather strong statement. I'll read you a couple of components of it, but the issue for the education community is we are now engaged in a lawsuit. You need to know that the last time we went after state money that was being withheld from us, it took almost 8 years to get it. So that was CTA v. Gould, which was the deficit factors. And the special ed money, Chris, was something that took over 12 years. So, but the last time they withheld money on our revenue limits, it was over 8 years before we got it. So don't be putting it in the bank today. But Jack says, in 24 years in Sacramento politics, it's always been my experience that a deal is a deal. On that December day when we made that agreement with the governor, I understood what we were agreeing to. I understood the consequences, and so did the CTA. But we also knew that the major sacrifice of $2 billion was the right thing to do. However, when we made the agreement with the governor, we also knew that if revenues went up, the agreement would wind up being a good thing for our schools. When it turned out that the revenues did go up, and so according to the deal made with the governor, our schools should have been the beneficiaries. Instead, the governor broke his promise. So that brings us to this point today where to protect our classrooms, we must seek justice from the court. I picked out selected components of this. I think Jack makes one more great point. In poll after poll, since the governor first released his budget proposal in January, that's this 05-06 budget year, the people of California have overwhelmingly and consistently supported additional funding for education. We're a shameful eighth from the bottom of all 50 states in per pupil funding, and the budget signed by the governor does nothing to lift us out of that. So watch out. Here it comes. That's the big news of the day. Of the week, 6 has lifted off. It's now being actively campaigned for and against. The governor has sent Tom Campbell, his director of finance, a senator, and a new assistant out into the public. They will make weekly campaign speeches to different communities about the benefits of his initiative process. We'll see how all of that turns out. On the revenue side of the state, we are seeing some significant increases in revenues. There are sales tax increases going on. There is a gas tax increase. If you think about the price of gas and then the percentage of the tax that's attached to that, and remember that the transportation community was the only community to receive any substantial benefit in the latest budget. There are significant revenues coming from that, and we see some continuing increases unlooked for within the budget for the state of California. The legislative analyst commends this budget because it didn't increase any of the deficit funding bonds. They did not issue any new bonds, and they paid off some of the debt, the $1.2 billion loan due to local governments. It was due to be paid back in 06-07. It was actually paid back in 05-06. and the transportation-related sales tax proceeds of the general fund. However, there's still structural deficiencies within the state of California's budget that 06-07 could be a shortfall year of about $6 billion. So they haven't fixed everything at this point. We can only hope that the legislators and the governor listen to what Jack O'Connell talked about as the polls of the opinions of the people of the state of California, the people they represent, that the issue for them is education. Always has been, appears it always will be until it's fixed. And that the people of California are more interested in education than potholes, that they're more interested in their kids than health care, universal health care, although that is a concern. They want to see that their education industry is fixed. So we can only hope that that happens. With your indulgence, did you want to ask a quick question? Go ahead.
Is there any indication whether the increased revenues are one-time revenues or ongoing revenues?
They are income tax and sales tax related. Generally, those are considered to be, unless you can identify a reason for the spike, as ongoing. What I would refer you to is...
As opposed to 1999, yeah, 2000.
When you had the dot-com sales that resulted in capital gains. But right now, it's pretty solid stuff. It's not attributable to any special issue. The real estate industry is obviously enjoying a well-publicized boom, and to that extent, there is some revenues being generated. But because of the exemptions on your tax returns for sale of homes, it's not necessarily a huge impact as you would think, that in particular the dot-com industry made. So they're not negating it. Done when we adopted our budget was we adopted tier one expenditures, and we agreed to go into deficit pending the outcome of finding additional revenues. That $450,000 translates to about $150,000 surplus after we pay for tier one. Okay, so we've paid for all of tier one, and we still have $150,000 in the bank. Now, the news from what Caroline likes to hear about all the time, the tax assessor, is very, very good for us this year. As you might expect, with the increasing property sales, the value of our property, we're looking at probably in excess of $500,000 additional revenue from property taxes over what we budgeted. The key that we don't really know about is the unitary tax associated with Diablo Canyon. What the tax assessor told me today was that they know PG&E's assessment statewide went up 3.2%. Now, be aware, I projected what has happened to us in the last 5 years, a 1% decline in the Diablo Canyon assessment, okay? Now, what they're telling me, and it doesn't necessarily apply. That's why I want to put this in very careful terms. The 3.2% is a statewide increase in the assets of PG&E. It doesn't necessarily apply to Diablo Canyon, which applies to us directly. But she says it's the first time that they've had an increase in the last 5 years, and it leads me to think that our 1% decline in PG&E in Diablo Canyon's unitary tax is going to be reversed in 1% or 2% increase. Our taxes from Diablo Canyon are $10 million. So a 1% increase is $100,000. Okay, so that gives you the context of that. If it's a 2%, it's $200,000. I doubt it's going to be 3% just because of the way the state divides up unitary taxes amongst all stakeholders within the state. So we have had some very good news from our real property assessments, i.e. $500,000. We also have an unknown piece about PG&E, and that's looking positive at this time too. So surprisingly good news on that front. Just to summarize, and then I'll turn it back to you, Caroline. I know you're excited, okay, but... Okay, but what we've got now is that we have $150,000 surplus, a $500,000 increase in property taxes. We're now at $650,000 in dollars that we can look at Tier 2, and that's part of a discussion we're going to have tonight, and to the extent that we want to look at all of those priorities that you guys are interested in, we can talk about that piece.
Russell, I have a question. Thank you for your information, all of it being, most of it being good. What happens with the lottery if it goes national?
The lottery?
Yeah.
Good question.
How much lottery is budgeted according to what they prognosticated it would be on a per ADA basis. And I think it was $128 per student. Their returns on the latest rendition of the mega item lottery or whatever they call it, that's being more, it's been more active than they thought it would be. But that was not unexpected in terms of the beginning.
I don't think it's just because you have good news that I feel like giving you a compliment, Mr. Miller. And it's not to make the rest of us feel self-conscious about our verbal skills, but I think it's really cool that someone who's so good with the money and figures is so, you know, smooth verbally. I think you have a good gift of explaining all these things very well in... We appreciate it.
I'm not sure this is going to hold me in good stead in the long run. But thank you, Adrian.
It's articulate. Yes.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I think that's also referred to as glib, Mr. Miller. Okay, well, I just had one question. Dr. Valentine, if you recall, and I don't have my paperwork with me tonight, but on the tiered list that we have, after we satisfied the requirements for Tier 1, do you recall how much money was associated with the Tier 2?
Yeah, I have it here. Tier 2 was a net of $320,000, and then there was an additional Tier 3 that was a net of about $300,000.
So that potentially that could mean that if all of these monies that Mr. Miller discussed tonight are realized, Mr. Parker might even see some deferred maintenance.
If the board stays with its original prioritization, yes.
Okay. So, action discussion items. Item 3 reads Foster Youth Family Services Resource Coordinator, SAFESOC.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could just do the honors to introduce this item. At our last board meeting in late June, a conversation took place among the board to bring back to us tonight a discussion of a proposal for a particular family services position that exists on the budget prioritization list. And I've asked Jackie Kirk-Martinez into whose department this particular position would fall if it were funded to spend about 10 minutes with us sharing an overview of what the function of that particular position would be as proposed in the district budget, and then open that up for questions.
Good evening. I'm just getting everything ready. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to speak and give you a little bit of information about the family services coordinator position, also known as a SAFESOC member. In front of you, as an extra handout, you will see a packet that of about 3 pages that has a PowerPoint presentation that's loose on the side. SAFESOC's outcomes are our outcomes. Safe, healthy, at home, in school, and out of trouble. That's what our school district's about. That's what our community's about. And that's what SAFESOC is all about. 4, the position is in the budget, approved and opened. We are beginning the discussion so that when and if it comes to fruition, we will be ready to help our families and our children be successful. Family Care Network is a service provider within our county that provides behavioral services, in-home therapy, sometimes transitions into the schools. EOC, Department of Social Services, probation, public health, all come together in hubs. Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Lucia Mar all have these system of care provided. Again, built on family strengths, all of the community members, as I mentioned previously, come together under one roof with the families and discuss what are the services and support they need in order to make them, the families and the individual children, safe in a structured home, healthy, in school, out of trouble. It is community-based. We unduplicate the services so that we maximize our efficient funds and services, especially during these times of budget crisis. It's school linked. Probation can come into the schools. Our public health can come into the schools. We can go into the homes and provide parent education through the school district with support through this coordinator. There are three levels of Safe SOC, and what we have in San Luis Obispo area is the intensive treatment team that gets together approximately every Friday or as needed, and it is the intensive services. That's when mental health needs to come in and provide what's called 3015 services. That's in-home mental health therapy, drug and alcohol, intensive probation. Sometimes social services will get involved, and it is also called family preservation. It is the most intensive treatment program that we have, and fortunately, San Luis Obispo does have a team together that sit around the table with the families to provide the services to keep the families intact as much as possible. What we don't have is the prevention and the intervention before it gets to the advanced stages. And that also kind of links in with how we want to try and do some pre-expulsion activities before children are up for expulsion, suspended frequently. We want the prevention and the intervention to occur. The family resource referral process, I put together a grid, and it's on one of your last pages, of how we could access the services with our family coordinator. This is just a draft graph. It's at the very, it's the second to the last slide on page five. Bottom slide, and it's very hard to read, very small print, and I can provide you with a larger grid if you'd like. How can we access this coordinator? We don't want roadblocks up. We want a safe system of care as still a prevention model before it gets to the intensive level. As you saw on the slide, the intensive intervention and preventative measures can go simultaneously up and down the grid. We do not have to start with prevention. We can go straight to the intensive services. We want to start with the prevention. The other part of the position is the foster youth liaison, and I spent a significant period of time this afternoon talking with our administrators about the foster care and the homeless McKinney-Vento Act services that are needed and required to be provided and mandated now to access transportation, free lunch programs, immunizations, credits, graduation support for these children. And I have a very touching videotape that I can offer you if you'd like to take it home, read it, review it. It's Santa Barbara County has some children that have gone through the foster care and homeless system, and there is a videotape of the experiences, the real-life experiences that they go through. And that is why we have the McKinney-Vento Homeless Act and the AB 490, so that we can provide support to these students. Safe SOC, this family advocate coordinator, and the foster care liaison, we will see a lot of overlap between children in these areas. That's why the coordination of this position prevents the duplicated services once again, so that we can have an effective system of care. I think if I know that Dr. Valentine said try and keep it short and simple and give him an overview of what this position looks like and what some of the duties are. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them to the best of my ability.
Mrs. Botwin.
Okay, I was first. Jackie, thank you so much for your overview, and this is very helpful. The last information you gave on the foster care makes a lot of sense, that the two would slide into the same departments and other things. But if at any point that the foster care and homeless should grow exponentially where it should take more effort away from the SafeSoc general distribution of services to the general students, I would like that information be brought back to us so that we don't limit our SafeSoc person by broadening their job to such a wide extent. But thank you for the presentation.
Absolutely. We're required, in response to that, we're required to provide two state reports to the Department of Education as to the number of foster care and homeless students we have in our district. And there's also a county report. And so that will be available every year, and we can keep track of how many foster youth and homeless children we have.
Mrs. Dickinson.
My question is sort of related to that in a way. The title is chosen by this district, and they kind of took out the safe side, that this is who they should be contacting. But I guess you can work on that. But I'm just curious about the title.
The title is actually Family Resource Services Coordinator.
And it's
Family Resource.
That's the start of it. Family, yes. Services Resource. Okay, I like that idea. So it doesn't start out with foster youth in the title.
Not in the title.
Good. I like that. Okay, and I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Mrs. Andreen.
Would this person be in the district office, Jackie?
Their office would be located in student services. However, it is the intent that they will be at all of the different school sites itinerant, just like our counselors and our other our nurses, available to all of the school sites.
Okay, so they would be physically moving around quite a bit to the school sites.
Absolutely, and providing a lot of parent education as well as providing support to the families, to public health, to probation, working with the families very closely, yes.
Okay, and we had a job description for this kind of position a while ago in our packet, and I can't remember what it said, but do you envision this person will get to the level of the prevention programs if you have one additional person to do this?
I'm sorry, I don't.
In the job description, I can't remember if it addressed prevention programs. Do you envision that if we get one person to do this next year, they'll be able to work with all the school sites and really engage in prevention activities, or do you think they're going to be mostly going, what's that middle level between intensive and
intervention?
Intervention.
I think in combination with the school site counselors as well as the coordinator, they'll be able to provide the prevention coordinated with the other agencies.
Okay, thanks.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Just watching this work, you know, there's so many agencies, and communication is the biggest problem. You know, communicating with all of, getting them all to the table, and who's doing what and who provides what. So having someone in charge of communication is really the key part of the whole job. Isn't that correct?
It absolutely is. And currently I'm attending integrated services management team meetings, and we are monthly at the table together, starting
That's
discussion
awesome.
And coordinating where we're going to be and what are our duties and making sure we don't duplicate and opening up that communication. Absolutely. And email is a fabulous thing. There's emails all the time between all of the multi-agencies in coordinating families and the services.
That's great. And one last thing on that prevention. You know, children are so, and their situations are so complex that, you know, you may be an intervention in one area, but because you have all these other people at the table, it functions as prevention in other aspects of their lives. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So you're simultaneously intervening here, preventing that problem, which could have occurred if you didn't intervene. And
Jackie, absolutely. I'm concerned with, all of this. I love the whole idea of this, but our homeless population, do we have any idea what that might be? Say last year, for example?
We do have specific numbers of how many children are doubled up in home.
How do we identify them?
There are several different ways. It's a growing population and a growing awareness, and we have some indicators that we are sharing with school staff. Be on the lookout for these predictors and these indicators, and then working with the counselors on helping them link with the counselors and having the discussions with their peers, their teachers. We also have it on our emergency cards, a residence question area. Are you in a temporary housing? Hopefully they will answer to try and get some additional support. And we also know the addresses of all of the shelters in the area, and if they put that address down, we have the SASE box that we check as well, and we can pull all of that information up. We'll have it available to our counselors and our nurses to help support them. I don't know if we'll be able to get every child identified, but definitely it is a growing awareness to all of our school sites.
It's such a vulnerable group.
You're absolutely right. And we have some research too, as well as gave you the children's summary report.
Yes, thank you for that.
That also talks about some of the poverty in our community.
Okay. Mrs. Botwin?
This is very, it's wonderful, and listening and looking and watching the presentation, I can see why Santa Maria went within 1 year from one safe sock to two and started dividing them up. There were so many categories that they were able to cover. I also want to know, Rick, you have item number 10. How does this overlap? I know these two areas are going to overlap. On page 10.1, it talks about the new job that we're asked here to add, the program specialist behavior intervention. Okay, and that's supposedly coming from money we already pay out for consultants and so on. But it seems to me that there's going to be definitely some overlap here. Is that correct? You don't think so? Where's Rick? I see people saying no, but... No, okay.
Yeah, it's probably something Jackie can speak more on, but actually, no, they're unrelated. I mean, there could be some overlap, but they're really
well,
two different
things. Well, it talks here about pre-intervention, and this is a thing that Patty just brought up a few moments ago. So could they be overlapped? That's what I'm asking is could these people, of course, working together with some of the same students, certainly there would be an overlap.
That's why communication is of such importance, and the intent is not to have that overlap. It's the foster youth homeless and the safe sock components, but some of the behaviors the students do exhibit are overlapping within that program specialist. It is not in the job description that program specialist is actually a service provider. They are a trainer and a task analysis and behavior support developer. In addition to
specific curriculum and modifications and things like that. One question I have about this, I think that an interest the board has had is to reduce the number of expulsions that come forward to us. Will there be a way of tracking how this will affect that? Because I know that that's a very personal experience for all of us to have to face that, to deprive children of their educational rights. I think that's where this arose. And so how do we see this position really reducing the number of expulsions that we see, specifically because a lot of the expulsions we see are for drugs and alcohol and things like that?
That's a very good question, Mr. Unger. We are looking at having the administrators working with that coordinator, providing as much parent education and student education as possible. about drug and alcohol in coordination with the counselors. The suspensions and the pre-expulsions and the expulsions will be tracked. There is data in the other safe SOC positions that do show a significant decrease in the expulsions. Of course, it did take a period of time to get the foundation built to provide all of that intervention and pre-intervention. But it did show, and it does show, a significant reduction. There is some great statistics out of LucMR that showed that the expulsion rate dropped significantly and attendance increased significantly.
Excellent. Madam Chair, now that we're talking about expulsions, it just brought to mind that we often look for a way to help the family to deal with the problems once they have come to us for expulsion, when we may be suspended on condition that they participate in some sort of a program that will help them. Do you see it that there's a possibility for the board to impose a condition that students work with the safe SOC person to come up with a plan?
I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
And I would anticipate that should it occur that there is a pre-expulsion, that before even the board meets, that there's a safe SOC meeting, so that there may be even a treatment plan or a educational plan proposed by safe SOC.
Mm-hmm. And we might even know about that when the matter is brought to us for expulsion, what's been recommended and whether there was cooperation and all that. It might help us to have a better record to decide our expulsion cases.
Absolutely. Thanks. And safe SOC meets on a regular basis, weekly if necessary.
Okay, Dr. Valentine, did you have something to add? Oh, well, just your mic is down. Okay.
Thank you.
Mrs. Martinez, thank you very much. Okay, item four, protocols for revisiting previously approved board budget priorities. Dr. Valentine.
Thank you. Actually, my microphone was poised for this item. Following Mr. Miller's report on the budget, this topic becomes even more salient, I think, for the board's discussion. Again, legitimate reasons to come back and look at the budget priorities. What we've suggested as a conversation starter for tonight is that the board might want to look at the budget questions that come forward in light of those two possibilities. Number one, there are ideas that may come forward regarding the budget priorities that simply represent afterthoughts to the budget process that the board has gone through. Each year we develop a brand new budget, and one thing to consider is whether in the upcoming budget project for the next year, would such afterthoughts do well to wait until that budget process took place, rather than bring them up at every single board meeting. The second piece would be to ask ourselves, conversation starter, are we looking at something that is unexpected, unforeseen, represents an opportunity that maybe wasn't anticipated, or, as in the case of tonight, what would happen if more revenues appeared than we had actually prioritized for? And those would fall into a second category that the board might seriously want to consider bringing back for discussion. And so the suggestion, at least for the conversation starter regarding protocols, is for the board to perhaps entertain those conversations when a budget idea comes forward and decide whether we're talking about the first category of budget piece, which is just an afterthought, or whether we're looking at a truly urgent matter that would drive us to reconsider the budget. Staff will take any direction that the board wishes to provide on that.
Thank you, Mr. Millar.
Thank you. The reason that I was kind of pushing, among others, for a discussion of the way we approach this process or the protocols is I was somewhat disturbed that we had put a lot of folks to task and ask them to invest a lot of time and energy to make recommendations to the superintendent and to the board, and ultimately resulted in a plan that anticipated changed circumstances. Now, if we were just doing a regular budget building process that didn't build in what ifs of additional funding and how we want to spend the money, then I guess my concern would be more that, yes, we've got to be flexible and address the scenario where the changed circumstances, truly changed circumstances, make us look at some of our budget priorities. But I was just bothered because we built a fairly elaborate approach to what happens when the circumstances do change, and it was also sort of dovetailed with our assumptions that Dr. Valentine and Mr. Miller build into the budget planning process that comes to us. So it disturbed me that we might cherry pick one or two items and end up sort of disrupting the validity of a process that I think worked pretty well and is panning out to be a really good thing that we did. I don't want to push for some sort of rigidity that makes us less agile when we need to be agile, but that was my concern. We're probably going to get...
spend our money, if we keep changing our priorities, then I think we will lose focus on what it is that we've decided initially, and I'm concerned that we would lose focus. I'm concerned also, for me, with the uncertainties that we see in Sacramento, that we could have commitments that we could make and we couldn't fulfill the commitments. Certainly, if things change somewhat, I think we can look at that. But I think that if we build the budget, we agree with the budget in June, the end of June, and it begins July 1st, that we need to try to stick with the budget that we agreed with. And I don't think that we should be making a lot of changes. I'm willing to look at changes for the following year. I don't think that we can look into that crystal ball that clearly that far out, and I think it's a mistake for us to constantly be changing what we've agreed on, and I think it confuses the school district, and I think it sends the wrong message to folks.
Dr. Olker.
I would surprisingly agree with Mr. Millar and Mr. Unger. Thank you.
He's just trying to distance himself.
Whichever of you. Mrs. Botwin?
I was going to just suggest that since we are, thank you, Russell, very much, equipped to accept and move on to Tier 2, that I would like very much to make a motion tonight on two items in Tier 2, simply because of the
That's
need.
Not on the agenda item.
This is right here. I'm looking at it. This is protocols for... I think that this could certainly be a protocol that we start tonight that we establish for the future if we have enough money to continue through our tiers, that we go ahead and do so. The only reason I put the crunch on that instead of doing it at the next meeting, which is what, the 23rd of August, Ed, is our next meeting, is because that these two items, both the PEAs and the Safe Sock Homeless, are things that if we start move on now, we could have them in place by September, maybe. It'd be a crunch, but it would move right along instead of waiting for next year or so on. So, any other comments? But
I have a comment.
I'll come back to
Mrs. Andrews?
I have a question that came up as I was listening. Does it take further board action for the administration to just go ahead and spend the money under Tiers 1, 2, and 3?
No, our understanding was that was in place.
Good. Okay, because that would be the better procedure from our standpoint. If you've got the money and we've told you how we would like to see it spent, I didn't want you to have to come back to us. So that would be part of the protocol, is that it's self-executing. And then the other thing, I tend to agree that unless there's something unusual or unexpected, we should live with what we've decided, because it discourages individuals who were disappointed from lobbying, and it discourages staff from having that uncertainty about, well, not discourages, but prevents staff from having that uncertainty in terms of how to make things happen. So I don't think we should revisit unless there's something unusual. And I don't know what something unusual means, but I think we can decide that if it comes.
Blah, blah, possibility of adding a second coordinator for services affirming family empowerment system of care, SafeSoc. Who, are, were you putting that on me that I wanted to add two?
It's on page 4.1.
Yeah, if I captured that in error, I apologize, but what I was hearing was a suggestion that we increase the SafeSoc coordinator position to more than one.
No, no, never. I said that down the road we may, like other districts have done, but no, I wanted us to start with one, and then, yeah, you heard that too? Good. Okay, and then the other thing here was on the PE, AIDS, in different places it says different things, and I've got the, just happened to have the budget recommendation with me, and it says one through three, and on different places it says different things, like the PE AIDS was grade K through six was one of them. Can we get that straightened out? I thought that's what we had talked about was...
I thought it was four through six.
Four through six for the AIDS, yes. Right. Okay, so that was two different things.
Is that correct, Dr. Valentine?
Tell me what number item we're looking at that has PE AIDS.
Number six on tier two.
Yeah, that deals with teachers, actually.
Okay, no, this was something else, and I don't even see it on here.
It didn't make the list.
It didn't make the list, the That's PE right. help for
that
the grades four
after.
Through six?
Right.
That
yes.
If I may, as I recall, it was a broader proposal than that, and part of, I think, why there was some hesitation about it is that it was so broadly drawn that it was kind of hard to know for sure. It was more of assistance for four through six in
right.
a variety of different ways, and that's my recollection of it.
Yeah, that it came down to they needed four assistants, I think. Was could we have some information on that,
if I could,
please?
I could respond a little bit. There are two different pieces, I think. There was a generalized proposal to provide assistance to grades four through six with sort of the suggestion that staff come back with an idea for that, and it wasn't related to PE. It was just related to the classroom. Then there was a more specific proposal that talked about providing PE aides to folks, which did not make, neither one made the list. What we see here is a one-year proposal to match primary teachers, and remember the primary classrooms do not have physical education specialists come in, grades four through six do, to have a partner PE teacher so that the classroom teacher and the PE teacher together would work on teaching PE with the idea at some point this would serve as a professional development experience for primary teachers in the area of physical education, and it would be a one-year proposal.
Okay, I don't know who was down first. I'm sorry.
As I understand it, there's enough money right now that Mr. Miller's foreseeing to do the rest of the items on Tier 2 and 3. When we really get the final figures on the unitary tax, if there's a substantial amount of money such that administration wants further direction, I would think that would be an unforeseen or unusual opportunity that you would bring back.
In the revenues from categorical programs, it's not increased at the same rate as our salaries have. So what we are doing is we're eating into our discretionary money to the extent that it's almost getting to be 100% allocated to people, and we've actually had to reduce some people positions because our salaries have increased more than the thing. Those are structural things that we now confront ourselves with because of the adjustments that we make, and then we don't intend for it to happen, and it does. But we need to reveal to the board those kinds of concerns that we're finding. And then as you guys also have different ideas, we would discuss those. But focus on October being the time to make those adjustments, that if the unitary tax, if this thing plays out to be more than or less than, we would make our adjustments. But I feel fairly confident on the basis of my discussion today with the tax assessor that we could implement, as you directed, Tier 2 and Tier 3. We've already done one. Tier 2 and Tier 3 have enough money to pretty much put into play. I think you need to give us time to look at how we do that. okay, because there's people involved in this, there's process involved in it. We have to go through a couple of things. You just don't turn the switch tomorrow and it goes. So we would have that now as our next step, and we bring it back to you with the finality of it all.
Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, I also just want to alert the board that we'll be bringing on August 23rd a discussion of strategic planning coming forward. And certainly our expectation is that budget discussions and when we land on the strategic planning direction that the board is comfortable with, that budget discussions hopefully will be filtered through the strategic planning process and that we'll have greater direction. I don't think we'll always have a definitive direction, but we will have greater direction for these budget discussions than a simply wide open discussion of what would you like to buy next.
Okay, well, I'd just like to throw my two cents in on the protocols for revisiting previously approved budgets. We spent a lot of time, you know, as has been said, developing the tiers. There was community input. There was input from staff. And once having built that, I think we need, I don't think it's proper or appropriate to go back and begin changing it around unless something really unforeseen comes up. I think we need to allow it to play out the way it was established. I don't want to tie our hands if we suddenly find that we have some kind of a need or something catastrophic happens. Certainly we can bring things up, but we need to be mindful that every time we bring something up, just we need to remember that a word from us causes staff to do a lot of work. And so we can't just be throwing out all of our ideas for things because staff already does a lot of work, but it causes them to do a lot of additional work and to, you know, to head down paths that we might not really be seriously in.
The conditions that would trigger tier two are could be relied upon, is that right?
I think that we can absolutely rely upon tier two for as of today. And I think that we have every reason to believe tier three can be implemented also. So I'm without doubt that we can go all the way through Tier 3 and be able to fund it on the basis of information that I have right now.
And it's the consensus of the board, then, that I gather that we allow this, our fail-safe system, our Dr. Strangelove-like approach to things to go forward?
Yes, I think so.
Item 5.
Public comment?
Oh, public
is
comment.
There any public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on then. Item 5, the district mission statement presented
Madam
by
Chair, this,
Dr. Valentine.
Thank you. This item comes forward again at the request of the board. I mentioned a moment ago that we would be bringing forward some discussion on strategic planning on August the 23rd. Driving the strategic plan is a mission statement that has been developed and in place for some time. The board has had an opportunity to look at the mission statement through the board retreat, and the mission statement is included in the item tonight. But there was a request to have some conversation about that mission statement and, if appropriate, to direct staff to do something with it.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I have something to pass out here, two ways. We've been doing a lot of talk tonight. We've been here for 3 hours talking about property and social work and those kind of things, money. So this is a shift in gear here. It's like asking everyone to lay on their back and look up at the stars and see the big picture for a minute. So I hope you'll have that refreshed feeling while we, you know, continue with this discussion here, start this discussion, I should say, on what is the mission of education, which is our biggest question and our most important thing to address, really, now that we have, you know, money to spend and, you know, what is our mission? So I think it is appropriate, since the mission statement was developed several years ago, and now we're in a new century, and things do keep changing, to, and it is our responsibility as a board to know what it is and think about it, to think about it, and to invite others to think about it, too, I would like to add. One of the reasons that I ran for the board was I heard Leon Panetta last summer at an event, and he mentioned that they do it. He's, you know, the Institute of Public Policy in Monterey, and he mentioned that 80% of college students surveyed thought government affected their lives in no way. And it just made me think that, you know, we work so hard to educate students, but maybe when they graduate, they don't really know how society works. You know, they've worked hard on their reading and math, and they have their career goal, and maybe their focus is somewhat small. So that was one thing I was interested in. And, of course, you know, getting people to think is another thing I'm really interested in. Watching, we were in the election, you know, cycle last summer, national elections, and it seemed to me people were so swayed by advertising and didn't really have thinking. So in our mission statement, it mentions we educate students to become self-sufficient individuals who are capable of making significant contributions to society, et cetera. And I think it's, I think one could make a case that self-sufficiency is in fact an illusion. And do we in the school district want to teach students to pursue an illusion? Or do we want them to understand in a profound way their significant place in a network, a community, and a world? And I don't think that that happens just naturally. Now, when I emailed Leon Panetta a couple months ago after this, or whenever, after the retreat, just to say, to review that those surveys, because there's a new one now in 2005 also. And he talked about how in the 2004 survey, 52% of college students had never had anyone ask them personally to get involved in public service or politics, but even public service. So they never thought about it, they didn't do it, and there was a high correlation with not voting. So the point was that it needs to be a deliberate effort to help kids see the big picture and their place in it and their responsibilities in it. You know, we could be more specific on what we mean by self-sufficient. Do we want them to grow up, you know, move away from parents and pay their own bills? But that's a somewhat culturally specific goal. Or do we want them just to be able? Well, what about students with disabilities? So I think we should look at self-sufficiency. You know, Mike, those two words, and some have said, like Dr. Valentine mentioned this to me, and also I talked to Mary Jo Devitt, who helped write the mission statement, and some of you here did, but Dr. Valentine and Mary Jo both said to them, self-sufficient and self-reliant, which is the word I would rather use, mean the same thing, but I don't really think they do. You know, my glasses broke this week, and, you know, I have my old ones on temporarily, and, you know, they're sufficient. They're not sufficient. They're not sufficient, but I am relying on them. And if you look up in the dictionary, sufficient means enough. And reliable means dependable and self-confident, or confident, not self-confident, but confident. So those are totally different in my view. Well, not totally different, but quite different. Self-sufficient and self-reliant. We also talk about students making a contribution and implying that it's an option to make a significant contribution. And I would argue that each person does make a significant impact one way or another, positive or negative, they add or subtract. So they need to think about what is their contribution. It's not just, you know, maybe I'm capable of making a significant contribution. I do, and what is it? You know, how am I impacting my world? So I think language matters and concepts matter because policies come from those, and it's important to think about it. I had an idea for just for a mission statement that was not completely different, but it would be the mission of San Luis Coastal Unified School District is to educate students to become self-reliant while appreciating the interdependent nature of all life and human endeavor so that their contributions to our changing, culturally diverse world community may be thoughtful. The district seeks to provide the highest quality programs and services so that all individuals will have the opportunity to realize their full intellect in his own Cheerios, But it goes without saying that the kid would have a few hunger pangs were it not for the cow, the grain that fed the cow, the farmers and dairy people and truck drivers who delivered the goods, his mom, his dad, not to mention the Cheerios ad infinitum, however you say that. When you just take a step back, everyone comes to see more than a little dependent, which does not make us deficient. But, you know, self-sufficient, I wonder. So I think it's good for us to realize we're not sufficient unto ourselves, but we rely upon ourselves and we depend on ourselves to, you know, be proactive and do the best we can. And I think it's worthwhile discussing it because it's going to generate thinking and approaches and lessons and all. There's a couple other things there for you to read. But anyway, that's all. Thank you for listening.
Mrs. Baldwin.
Yeah, I have three suggestions, all of them brief, but I liked your proposal at the bottom of the previous page there. But I would put a period. You said the mission of San Luis Coastal School District is to educate students to become self-reliant while appreciating the interdependent nature of all life and human endeavor so that their contributions to our changing, culturally diverse world community may be thoughtful. Period. Yeah, that's where I would end it. Because if we do the incredible job of making any kid at any age thoughtful, all the rest is unnecessary. Quality, programs, services, etc. We've done it. That kid has become thoughtful, and that's, I think, the prime mover there. Second, I just wanted to throw this at you, Adrienne. Here is the mission statement for Lucy Amar School District. One sentence. The mission is to ensure that all students acquire the knowledge, skills, and attitudes essential to becoming productive members of society. End. Short, sweet, and to the point. I like that one, too. I also like yours. And I also wondered if we could, on the 23rd, we're going to be looking at what, Ed, you mentioned earlier?
We're going to give you a first kind of blush or draft look at some strategic planning ideas. Now,
these are the ones that we've already worked on already. You're just bringing them back. We're looking at them
again.
Yeah,
but they're considerably fleshed out.
Okay, but these are the ones that we originally worked on.
Yes.
That we set up. Okay, would this be possible if everybody would agree, we could take the sheets home, look them over, think about it, and bring it back for the next meeting, and that would integrate certainly with the mission statement would be an integral part of that and help us actually on our prioritizing. Everybody? Anybody? Then we can go home.
I don't know. Mrs. Andrine has a comment.
Yeah, I have a couple comments. First, I like your proposals, and I really like the word self-reliant better than self-sufficient. I also have never liked the word guarantees and would rather see something like strives continually because it implies that we are always trying to do better. But my larger concern is process, and that is, should a school board just sit down and change the mission statement top down? Superintendent and board members, you know, have changed, so that would need to be redone. And I think there's a mission statement at each school site, isn't there?
Yeah, it appears in a number of places. I think that if there were changes, we could accommodate them, though.
It's not a big deal to change it. I'd like us to think a little bit more about process before we decide that we're going to change the mission statement, because our principals, our teachers, our students might have ideas that would be very helpful to us. And I guess I'd like to see the administration come back, if we do agree that we want to take a look at it, with a suggested process that's more inclusive.
Can I say something? I agree. Can I say something? Mr. Millar's been
waiting. May I speak on the original?
Okay. Part of the history of this is missing, and that is sometime during my first term, a whole slew of people gathered in this room, I believe, and went through mission, goals, all kinds of things. The guarantee word came up again. A lot of things were discussed, a lot of time was spent, and basically it ended up being the mission statement was not changed. So more has happened since 1991. Having said that, I would support changing self-reliant to self or self-sufficient to self-reliant, and leaving guarantees out, putting some other language like Patty or Adrian suggests.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I never intended the board just to make a change on this if it were my choice. I think the broader the discussion, the better. And in fact, I would be, my goal just as a citizen would be that the, the discussion is more important than any changes. And even if it doesn't get changed, the fact that it would be widely discussed, I think would be a very good thing.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because what I started to hear the board doing was wordsmithing a currently existing mission statement without input from the public, and I have a hard time with that, and I would object to that strenuously. We are, as I would remind everybody, although I think you know, a reflection of the community, and I suspect that the mission statement is a reflection of the community as well, and I don't suppose that seven members of a board can proposed to come up with something in 15 minutes that would affect the school district for years to come. So I would go along with what Mrs. Andreen is proposing. If this is something that we think is important, then I would support us hearing from the administration about what it is that we actually would like and what would be a process that could be workable. Saying that, I think that we can need to continue, though, to go along with the strategic planning process, which Dr. Valentine is proposing that he bring forward on the 23rd.
Okay, Mrs. Botwin, and then we have Mr. Evans from the public would like to speak.
I like any and all suggestions. If we change it, fine. If we don't change it, fine. I like the changes that were recommended. But basically, I think the purpose is...
Okay, Mr. Evans.
And I am speaking as an individual who had, and I can't recall exactly how, some involvement in crafting this mission statement. And when I look at the date, I also think about what education looked like at that time, which was aimed more at creating a more holistic approach to a curriculum, to the child. I like in this mission statement the fact that it's global, that we're talking about the person, not the educational product. I like that it talks about a role in the community. And so those things are important to me. And I'm going to suggest, as I look at this mission statement, that we are in a time, given the constraints of No Child Left Behind, inappropriate state standards, that we're beginning to see a disconnect between what we're doing and this mission statement, because our focus is now really teaching to a test, not creating a person. And I would love to have that discussion, if for no other reason, to challenge much of what's happening in education these days. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Unger.
So Mr. Evans, I would hope that you're not proposing our mission statement be something like the San Luis Coastal Unified School District guarantees to have schools that score in the 800s and proficient students who will appease No Child Left Behind, something like that. Is that what you're thinking about? Is that the...
It seems where we're
thank you.
Dr. Valentine.
If I may, I think the discussion is very valuable that we've had, and thank you for opening that up and appreciated Tony Evans's comments, too. I think there is as much value derived from defining a, and maybe I want to reverse this, actually. I think there is as much value derived from clarifying what our current mission statement actually means in operational terms and how it would drive a strategic plan and what does this mean to us, as there is in a discussion of creating another mission statement. The issue is to bring people together and come to some kind of vision as to what the mission of education is. a process that took 6 months in 1991 and was reconfirmed in the subsequent years thereafter. I think we're probably looking at a document that has many, many of the values that this community embraced at the inception of the mission statement, continue to embrace at the revision of it, and there may be some nuances that are important to us enough to change. But whatever we come out with in terms of a mission statement, I hope that we're looking for something that actually drives real activity within the school district. And so whether we deal with self-sufficient individuals or self-reliant individuals, what is really important is, do we have individuals who can rely on their capabilities, who can rely on their judgments, who adjust to the changing circumstances of life? If we want children to be at home in a culturally diverse world, then we need to provide opportunities for students to experience cultural diversity, whether it's in the classroom or whether it's through technological means or whether it's through the community itself, whether it's through the cultural opportunities that a school has. I think the document alludes to some very, very important things. Tony, I think you hit this right on the head when you said that this mission statement is about students. It isn't about standards. It isn't about test scores. It isn't about right and wrong answers. Those are all building blocks to capacities that are far more important to us with our own children. And the whole second part of the mission statement deals with a wonderful concept that a school district is about human potential. Whether it's social, whether it's creative, or whether it's emotional, whether it's intellectual, whatever it is that you want to be, but the mission of a school district is about human potential. This kind of mission statement that we have, that exists, or one that we might land on in the future, I think needs to give us a way of looking at our school district and say, are we really pursuing our mission, or is this something that exists on the wall and exists on our brochures, or is it something we believe as a classroom? I'll end the way I started, and that is, I think there's as much value in disseminating this mission statement as there would be in developing yet another one, or minor changes, perhaps.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I love what you said. That's awesome, and also what Mr. Evans said. But this is about students, and this is about their full potential. The only thing that I think is a little missing is we need to make sure they are fully aware of their context, you know, in history and in biology and in culture and, you know, all those kind of ways. It's not just about me and my career and my skills and my potential, but it's me and my whole context that I think that it's important. And it would definitely, you know, could filter out into lessons, you know, in history and biology and every other area, just to be aware of it. But I like what you said.
Okay, I'd just like to be clear. Have we given any direction to staff, or have we just had a discussion here tonight?
I don't think we spoke with a unified voice about any direction to staff. What do you think?
No, I didn't hear an absolute direction. I can give you some input and work with it as you will. There is so much energy in an organization at any given moment in time. I think if we're in a position to pursue a strategic planning process, that the majority of that energy needs to go into the strategic plan, and that part of that process is to come to terms with what our mission is as it's currently stated. If we spend lots and lots of time to develop yet another statement, I'm afraid it may diffuse the actual strategic planning process.
Mr. Unger.
I would suggest that, as I said, we go forward with the strategic planning process, and then we can, and then I think once we determine what that looks like.
And I don't dislike any of your thoughts, Adrian, but I feel that some of these things about making significant contributions to society really do say that no one's an island. I think if we work with this, and really break it down and connect it to our strategic plan, we probably won't find significant flaws in it. And if we do, then I think we can take that step backwards to work on it. That's kind of where I end up, just because of the fact that we really committed to work on the strategic plan at our board workshop, and there has been significant work by staff in that direction. And I think we can move ahead with this current mission statement, and if the flaws turn out to really handicap us, then we might have to take that step backwards. That's sort of the way I look at it. And I'm willing to live with the fact that I don't like every single word in it, because I don't get to write it. It was written by a larger group. That's kind of where I end up.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I wonder if, as a compromise, we could just change those two words, when self-sufficient to self-reliant, and guarantees to seeks or continually strives, because I don't think that really changes the whole work of the previous committee. And Mary Jo mentioned that she didn't like the word guarantees and does support self-reliant. And I don't think that's a huge change, that maybe we do have the power to do that without significantly changing anything else. It's just a thought.
It's action discussion. I believe, isn't it? It's actually under action discussion.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could put it on an agenda and let the community kind of respond if they want to. Or sometime.
Okay, well, I think the opportunity, when we have the advance agenda, then you'll have an opportunity to set that up for a future date.
Can I point out something that's a little difficult, and I hate to say this because we talked about it so much last time, but there is no advance agenda on here, and I think...
Yes, there is.
Where is it?
23.
Hooray. I was looking in the wrong place.
My heart just stopped.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be wrong about that. I didn't want to revisit that discussion.
Okay, well then, if we finished with this item, we will move to the action consent, and let me know if there's anything that you would like to be pulled. Item 6, action on California High School exit exam waiver request for students with disabilities. Item 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 8, approval of student teaching agreement with University of Laverne. Item 9, approval of change in number of workdays. Item 9 has already been pulled and is not being presented tonight. Item 10, approval of budget and proposed job description for program specialist behavior intervention in San Luis Obispo High Schools. Item 19, approval of extended field trip request, San Luis Obispo High School Future Farmers of America to Catalina Island. Item 20, award of bid number 0195, snacks and beverages. And item 21, award of bid number 0196, ready to serve pizza.
Move to approve items 6, 8, 10 through 21.
Second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, items number 7, Mrs. Dickinson.
Aside from just being really excited that Andy Marinello is back in the district, I had a question about, without mentioning names, there's a couple teachers that are moved from 0.8333 full-time to 0.75, or from full-time to 0.80. My question is just, are these temporary teachers or are tenured, and do they have a... Is it okay with them, you know, to have their day reduced? I mean,
yeah, I'd have to know about the I know you don't want to mention names. I'd have to know about the specific individuals to indicate whether they're temporary or probationary. We tend to indicate temp, probe, and if there's nothing there, that's a permanent teacher, and it's with their consent.
Oh, it's with their consent. That's good.
Move to approve item number 7.
Second. Moved by Dr. Olker, seconded by Mrs. Andreen. Those in favor? Opposed? That passes unanimously. We move on now to the advance agenda.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
On the advanced agenda, under the second column, it says PEAIDS. 23.1. And we're looking at the agenda items not yet scheduled. And I'm looking at PEAIDS, and I'd like to add to that K through 6 information on that. Okay, the one program that we're going through Tier 2 is a one-year program for 1 through 3 with the teacher involved. So I would like to have information on PEAIDS K through 6 for us to look at for our next budget.
Okay, are you remembering that K-3 is 20 to 1?
Yeah.
You are. Okay.
I'm seeing those as two different things. The tier 2 was a different was different than PEAIDS, as I understood it. And to me, PEAIDS refers to a discussion about whether or not PE teachers in at least 4 through 6th are able to do the job sufficiently with the staffing that they have, as opposed to budget item and tier 2, which talks about co-teaching or something like that for PE teachers. So I see those two different issues. So I'm satisfied, Caroline, talking about PEAIDS as separate from that.
Okay, get on a future agenda.
So I'm sorry, I'm confused about just transpired.
I'm hearing that the board would like a discussion.
However we want to look at it to want to discuss this. I'm not proposing that we set a specific time for this. I would just like it to be on a future agenda.
Okay. Mrs. Andreen?
Yes. Dr. Valentine, just want to get your attention so I can say this directly to you, because you might help me remember what you and I corresponded about. One issue that I had spoken with you about was job shadowing, and where it says apprenticeship here, is that sort of the same thing? Internships for students in the community?
My recollection is that was an item that Mr. Unger had brought forward, and I believe it's a different item than
okay.
job shadowing.
Okay. I just had corresponded with you, Dr. Valentine, about job shadowing and internships for students in the community. And I would like to see us look at that as part of a study session on the larger issue of what we're doing for students to make the transition from school to career. And for some reason, I thought we had already discussed having that as a study session, but I don't see it here. Do we have agreement that there will be a study session on that?
Well, we do now.
Okay.
My recollection of our recent conversation, electronic conversation, was that the notion of working in the community is going to be part of the strategic plan discussion that we're going to bring forward on the 23rd.
Okay.
And I'd sort of was working okay. with that assumption. But we can bring it as a separate topic.
Well, too. I can hold back on the study session then until I see what you've got. I don't care how we raise it, but for me, there is a need to talk about the larger topic of what we're doing to help students prepare for careers and job shadowing that you reported to us about in our Friday packet was a part of that. But I think we're putting back some staff, and I don't remember which tier it's in, I'm sorry, but to help with the career guidance. And I'd just like to have sort of an overall sense of what we are doing to beef up our efforts and see if there's anything else we want to do in that area. So if you want to wait till after the strategic planning and then see if we feel we need a study session, that's okay with me. But it's a concern I have that I'd like to see us address sometime in the future, and I don't care when or how what it's called.
Thank you. We will, and I think we would need to do both. I don't think the strategic planning is going to be specific enough to get at the issues you've raised.
Okay, then do I have any support from anyone else for a study session?
Yeah,
yes.
I'll support
okay.
you.
I'll okay. support you, too. I would like to expand that, Patty, if it would be okay with you. I don't know if the rest of the board knows about the home ec program at Morro Bay High. The kids go out and actually do a job. Some of them work in the preschools and the kindergartens, and they go out to the nursing homes, and they'll spend 2 or 3 or 4 weeks there, and they're evaluated and so on. A real job. So if we could expand this, the apprenticeship, job shadowing, and what's already being done there, where we get information, I think you would enjoy it. The kids liked it.
Okay, I'll support expanding it to include that. Mrs. Dickinson.
I want to thank the board for accommodating all my thought processes and adding your thoughts on the mission statement, and I would like to have the board consider just making those two minor little changes, which are profound enough, I think, to do. I also want to say that yesterday I emailed two board members and Dr. Valentine about putting those notes and this idea and encouraging the public to think about it too, in like a letter to the editor type thing. And Dr. Valentine wrote back and said, just make sure you know that you do it as a citizen. He didn't really say, don't do it. So in the evening, I did turn it in. I don't know if they'll print it or not, but I just want you all to know it's not me pushing after this fact. I already sent it in, and it may generate some thoughts, so that's okay. But I would like to see if anybody else wants to put that on the agenda to make those two little changes.
That's okay with me to put on the agenda.
Is Chris?
I have one more thing that I'm not wedded on doing this immediately, but several years ago we instituted a requirement for our high school students that they undergo a computer competency class. And I'd like us to, at some point, be able to look at what we're teaching for computer competency and whether, in fact, what the curriculum in that class looks like is what's the expectation now for computer competency, say, being able to search the internet, do legitimate internet searches and things like that, as opposed to understanding the Microsoft Word programs, the Microsoft Office suite. I think that it's important that we decide if that's a class that we want to make strictly based the technical aspects of using a computer, or whether we more broadly want to look at how do we implement technology in the future and encourage students to use technology appropriately for their next steps. So I don't know how to put that, but it is something that, especially since my son just completed the class and you know I've had a chance in the past to look at the syllabus, I think it's a discussion we might want to look at how we're using that class.
So are you talking about a discussion that would visit the curriculum of apps?
I don't want to micromanage the curriculum, but I think it is important for us to hear perhaps in a study session what does a technologically educated person look like? What does a person who's competent with technology and computers, what does that person look like, and what are we doing to support that? Especially, again, assuming that hopefully most of our students will be able to use computers in a way that enhances their lives and the lives of others after they get out of school, whether it be writing a letter to the editor or doing legitimate research, going to college, replacing the use of the Library of Congress online with the Kennedy Library over here at Cal Poly. And I think that colleges are starting to look at that as well. And I think that's something that I have an interest in hearing about.
I think computer apps is intended just to be a sort of a basic introduction to computers, as opposed to a class that establishes proficiency.
I guess maybe I'd like to hear more about that.
Madam Chair, Chris, could we possibly have this information in a Friday packet, and then after looking it over, maybe bring it back again if you want to continue on with it?
That's a good idea.
Okay. Yeah, I'll second on that.
Okay, so direction to staff for a Friday packet?
And I also would like to have in a Friday packet, as long as we're on it. I see in your update, Ed, that you gave us information about Mary, who's going to go off for a year to reading recovery program, and so on and so forth. You sent us all the figures for that months ago when we discussed it, and I think it was about $250,000 it's costing us to send her off, to pay the fees for the Reading Recovery Program Institute, to pay for her substitute, and et cetera. I would like, could you send all, put those, all those figures again in a Friday packet?
Certainly will, but it wasn't $250,000. It was somewhere in the 100 to 125, that kind of range. I can't quote it exactly,
okay,
which included her salary and the cost.
I wanted her salary and her substitute salary, her replacement salary.
There is none of that. So.
Oh, there's no replacement?
She's not a classroom teacher at the moment.
So there's no no replacement. Okay, put those. And also the cost of the clinic, they have a charge. I don't know if it's $30,000, $40,000. Thank you.
Okay, then reports by board members and administrators. Mrs. Dickinson?
I just have photos from our board meeting. Everybody gets one. I made reprints for you. They're really nice. It's a good-looking group.
Thank you. Okay. Glenn, you're up. Oh, no. No. Go ahead, Dr. Valentine.
I'm sorry. I thought the board commentary was done. So.
Well, we were close to done, and I thought I gave Glenn the go-ahead to move to adjourn.
Oh, was that? I'm sorry. Then I'm glad I jumped. I wanted to share again something I'd shared with each of you individually, and that is that we received information over the summer that Standard & Poor's, who's an investment evaluation firm, also has a wing of its operation that evaluates the quality of education. And they took a look at school districts in the state of California, looked at the achievement level of their students, and also the kinds of educational challenges which vary from school to school district. And taking both of those into account, they identified what they called outperforming school districts, and those are school districts which are achieving higher than the expectations you might have. And of the 980-something school districts in California, they identified only 29 of them as outperforming districts, and I'm really pleased to share with the board in total here that San Luis Coastal is one of the 29 school districts identified as an outperforming district.
Move to adjourn.